Well, good evening all. Round 7 is upon us. Huge clash tonight, boys. Against, I think they might have dropped one game, Royal Park, but we're looking forward to it. Could be shades of Tullamarine from last season. With me for the first time on the podcast this season is the new boy, the young fella, Ryan Hattie. Ryan, how are you going to go tonight, mate?
How you going, Mark? Yeah, I don't know. I hear the boys from Royal Park are a bunch of young kids that are almost on the ATP tour, so we might have our hands full, but we'll see what happens.
I tell you what, mate, if they're on the ATP tour, they're not really reaching for the heights of greatness coming down the northern suburbs on a Thursday night, but we'll see how they go, mate. Now, are you? I'll get you back on later this season, mate, because we'll give you a nice old interview like we do with the rest of the boys. How are you enjoying it so far?
No, I am, yeah, it's good. I've just got to get a little bit better at playing doubles, I think. I've used to playing singles, and it's a complete different game, so hopefully I can improve a bit.
It certainly is, mate, especially when you've got the likes of the captain and the headman having a chat in every point.
Yeah, it's good.
Very, very good, mate. So thank you very much for joining us. It's a very, very short interview, boys, but look, I think we might shock tonight.
That's it. Hopefully we go for the win, and hopefully Clark flies up.
That would be exceptional. Thanks, boys. Back again later on the not in this evening, of course, but later on during the week, and we'll review this one. Thank you very much. Thank you, Ryan.
Cheers, mate. Thank you.
Thank you, boys. Well, good evening all, and welcome to the one and only podcast focusing on the weekly exploits of clowns and average tennis players. Yes, in that order. I'm Mark Foster, and this is episode 26 of C Special 1, Summary Man's Business. It wasn't a good face to finally hear from the newest member of the team, Ryan Hattie. Definitely looking forward to grilling him later on in the season. Not literally, of course, as it wouldn't be too economical, but what an interview that promises to be. Now that song, of course, was Trampled Underground by Led Zeppelin, not to be confused with the song we heard on Thursday night, Trampled on Court. Sadly, another loss for the Sunbury boys on Thursday night, the third in a row and fourth overall for the season, going down to a very, very good team in Royal Park by 17 games, 33-16. Is it panic stations yet? Well, hopefully we'll have that question answered by the end of this podcast. But before we look at what happened on Thursday night, let's get some feedback from episode 25, which of course was all about rounds 5 and 6. And let me tell you, either you people are getting soft in your old age with your feedback, or I'm just not creating enough controversy to get you all fired up. And of course, as always, the first cab off the rank is the good old cynical of Pinnacle, the Swedish chef himself, who said, "Not much to criticise on the podcast this week, unfortunately, but sorry to hear you were thinking of chucking it in. Sad as this might sound, it brings a smile to my face every episode, and hopefully you stick with it, as I'm a supporter of your work, even though I have a funny way of showing it." You do indeed. Long may it continue. Oh, before I finish up, curious to know if Miss Sunbury has some single friends for the hitman. Not much to criticise. Oh my word, Swedish chef, is your resistance weakening? Surely not. In all seriousness, thanks for the kind words, mate. With supporters like yourself, I obviously can't give this away. Well, not just yet. Now, I'm a little bit worried about this podcast bringing a smile to your face, as I'm picturing you as kind of like the village idiot out of Monty Python's Flying Circus. And if anyone's seen that sketch, they'll know exactly what I'm talking about. Thanks again for the support, mate. As for Miss Sunbury having some single friends, well, I'm not sure about that. Maybe we can get some feedback from Miss Sunbury for next week's episode. Mind you, mate, the hitman plays enough tennis on a Wednesday night, or he turns up, that is, in the mixed competition to strike up a conversation with one of the fairer sex. But as some of you listeners who know the great man would attest to, then conversation is not one of the hitman's forte. Now, speaking of the hitman, he then chimed in with the following banter. "Mildly amusing podcast, even though you're delusional about your so-called court speed. Only Clarky slower. Good to have you back. Who was supposed to be on the podcast?" Well, hitman, my court speed is legendary, and it's not just a myth, my friend. In fact, the only myth going around at the moment is that you have a so-called A game, which, by the way, any of us are yet to see. I would back myself against the likes of you any time in a sprint. You name it, I'll do it. although I have a feeling if I issue the challenge, I'll get the old I choose not to run, a la one Jay Seinfeld. So listeners, if you want to see this happen, let me know and I'll put the hitman to the test. Now, as for the question about who didn't come on the podcast, well, hitman, you'll get the answer one day once I start doing the sportsman's nights round, which of course the boys should all start thinking about doing as our talent is not on the tennis court. I think we could pull a decent crowd of at least 10 to 15 people. Who knows what topics will come up? There's a few that could emerge, probably none of which could really be repeated on this somewhat barely G rating of a podcast. Hitman then added, if you're lucky, I'll play Interstate Love Song on guitar for the podcast. Might have to get my wife Priscilla to sing. That's of course my wife and not my Hitman's. Oh my word, Hitman, I ran this idea past the beloved. I think she has finally stopped laughing. Oh, hang on. Yes, she has. I'm still thinking there is a reason behind your request last night. Maybe save it up for the sportsman's night. Finally, the Keyman asked if I could request more singing in the podcast. Now, Keyman, I've had a good long thing about this, and it kind of reminds me of the Essendon Football Club back in 2000 when they stopped singing the club song until they won the premiership. So, Keyman, this is my pledge. I will sing the entire final podcast from go to woe whenever this finishes up. Nothing will be spoken. It's all going to be by song. So, boys, make my dreams come true. Let's win the flag so I can give all the listeners reason to think that their lives are so much better than ours. Now, just before we get to what's coming up in the episode, I've been given some wonderful news. We would like to congratulate the Keyman and his lovely wife on the birth of their third girl and first child, Olivia. She was born on the morning of Monday, the 18th of March, 2019. Absolutely fantastic news, mate. We are so rapt for both of you. I'm tipping that unlike your demeanour on court, you haven't been able to wipe that smile off your face. So with that fantastic news, let's turn our attention to what's coming up in this episode. And in a packed program tonight, we'll have a look at the Round 7 loss against Royal Park, check out the usual segments, we'll go around the grounds for last week's results in C Special 1, we'll see who's doing what on the prestigious tipping competition, and we'll preview this week's must-win clash against Greenvale. And of course, being the end of Round 7, yes, it is correct, it is the mid-season review. Aren't you all excited? I tell you, this episode is absolutely packed. I couldn't possibly fit anything else in. We'll be back shortly for part two. Welcome back. So, last Thursday saw the boys welcome previously unbeaten Royal Park to Sunbury for the Round 7 clash. Before I get into it, I've actually got to say something here. We had had reports from Royal Park's previous opponents that they were full of A-grade juniors who were quite frankly arrogant and disrespectful towards their opposition. I'll tell you what, I'm not quite sure what has transpired between Royal Park and previous opponents, but I thought the boys were quite courteous and very, very respectful. Not a hint of arrogance, and by the end of the night, we found out that they could hit a ball too. And going into the clash, the round lineups for Round 7 were as follows. Foster 1, Clark 2, Taylor 3, and Hattie 4. First set was Foster and Clark winning 6-3. Taylor and Hattie then went down 6-1. Sunbury down by 2 with 2 sets played. So maybe there was hope. The next 2 sets would tell exactly what the story would be. And it wasn't a great story at all. Foster and Taylor going down 6-1 and Clark and Hattie going down 6-2. Sunbury down 11 with 2 sets to play. To be honest, after those sets, it would be absolutely impossible to see how the boys would get back. And that certainly was the case in the last 2 sets. Foster and Hattie having a crack, but went down 6-5, but did have their chances with a set point. Whereas Clark and Taylor went down 6-1. Royal Park proving to be too strong for the Sunbury boys, winning 33-16, the match finishing at around 9:15. The crowd was actually numbered between 8 to 10, including E.T.'s wife Leah and their faithful Pooch. So we are going to claim the dog in the crowd figure. So boys, 3 things I learnt. Number 1, I've got a news flash for the rest of the competition. Yes, Royal Park might be too good for this section, but bad luck, the rest of the comp is going to have to deal with it and suck it up. They can hit the ball, and that is exactly what this section needs. Number two, some sets are turning into routes, and this is the difference between winning and losing. And number three, poor old ET has had a night he would rather forget, but we all know the Silver Fox has got time to turn it around. Now, thanks to everyone's favourite, Audi Australia, let's go to this week's Audi Australia Player of the Year Award. The votes for round seven were as follows. One vote, Eric Taylor. Looked like he was having a crack, just a case of anything that could go wrong did go wrong. Only winning three games for the night and finishing down 15. Two votes to Ryan Hattie. A bit like ET, he did have a crack, determined to keep going despite his opponent having the edge on him, down 10 for the night. Three votes, Matthew Clark. Well, the captain hit the ball as well as he could. Told me he liked it hard and fast. I'm definitely hoping he's referring to his tennis. He was down 6 for the night. And four votes, Mark Foster. Faced off against Royal Parks, nominated number one for the night, although truth be told, any one of their first three could have played number one. Reasonable, down 3 for the night. So let's go to the Audi Australia leaderboard after round 7. Hattie moves to 7, one behind Taylor, the reigning Audi Australia Player of the Year on 8. And it gets very, very interesting. Smith, Clark and Foster are all now on 14, breathing down the neck of the hitman on 15, which is what he likes from what I've heard. Audi Australia, my word, what a fine piece of German automobile excellence. Sprechen Sie Deutsch, I hear you ask, only if the German language has one word, Audi. Speaking of Germany, did you know that you could fill up an Audi and it would get you from Sunbury to one of the oldest German settlements in Australia? That, of course, being the magnificent town of Harndorf in South Australia. That's just under 700 kilometres, folks. It is a long way to go and have a look at a cuckoo clock or two. Yes, boys, I'll say it again because I can. If you've never driven an Audi, then chances are you don't own one or know anyone who does. Or ever will. Audi! Vorsprung Deutsch Technik! Audi! Go on now! Now, thanks to One Tree Hill in Tura, down at Wilson's Promontory, it's time for the get a room segment. And there's one combination this week who came out all guns blazing, and it's the second time they've claimed this award this season. Yes, the captain and Foster, who probably shocked the young'uns at Royal Park, winning 6-3. I should probably add that the captain should take the credit for the scoreline. Matthew, that is all the credit I'm ever going to give you, son. Yes, One Tree Hill in Tura on Victoria's beautiful Wilson's Promontory. One Tree Hill sits on the very top of a grassy hill, 2.5 kilometres as the eagle flies from Corner Inlet, with a landmark cypress tree and an unforgettable 360-degree panorama across Corner Inlet, Wilson's Promontory, Bass Strait, the Strzelecki Ranges and lush South Gippsland grazing country. The property offers private, elegant and comfortable, fully self-contained accommodation for up to 7 people in beds and 8 if you use the large couch. I'll tell you what, folks, the wife and I stayed there 2 weeks ago for a birthday, and I've got to say the view was absolutely amazing. I'm not sure where else in Victoria you will get a view like that. There are 3 converted cargo containers all decked out with features, 3 bedrooms each with their own timber decking, a king room with windows on 3 sides and an ensuite bathroom, 2 queen rooms and a second living sleeping area with a 3-quarter bed. Now just around the corner from Tura is Agnes Falls, Port Albert, Waratah Bay, and 40 minutes away are the gates to Wilson's Promontory. You could virtually hear a pin drop. It was that quiet. Yes, One Tree Hill out at Tura. Do yourself a favour, folks. Take your significant other up there. You will be absolutely amazed. Special thanks to John, the proprietor, who looked after us. Now, courtesy of English football, it's time once again for the It's Not Me, It's You segment. And this week, yes, sorry mate, I've got to drop you in it. ET has the inglorious honour of losing all 3 sets with the captain, Foster and Hattie, all 6-1. A new low record that is unlikely to ever be challenged or want to be. Now this week really had me scratching my head about how to tackle the issue of the massacre in New Zealand of 50 Muslim worshippers at some mosques by an absolute nut job who is a terrorist. Let's not mince words, he is one of them. I could have gone down a few roads here. New Zealand's gun laws, or that wank stain of a politician, Fraser Anning, and his weak as piss comments about migration by Muslims to New Zealand. Then I remembered that politics is a no-no on here, according to some feedback a few weeks ago. So I will avoid that. So I was absolutely amazed to read the other day that the Premier League, English Football League and Football Association have been accused, quite rightly, of double standards for not holding tributes for the 50 people killed in the mosque attacks. Yes, that's right. The English Premier League, the most far-reaching of any football league in the world, along with the Football Association and English Football League, did not stop to remember the victims that were slain in New Zealand. All Premier League games, alongside four FA Cup ties, failed to recognise the tragedy by not having the traditional one-minute silence whenever there is an event of such magnitude. I find it absolutely staggering that the English FA then turned the blame onto this, back onto its clubs, and said it is up to the clubs if they want to hold a minute silence or not. We would support them if they did. If they did, we would support them. Well done. Sheesh, if any control or leadership needed to be taken by this weak institute of a farcical sporting body, it was there and then. It is interesting to note that most clubs in the English Football Association pay tributes on a weekly basis to people who have passed away, from well-known people who support that club to staff members as well. And in fact, all clubs held a one-minute silence after the attacks in Paris in 2015 and also in Nice in France in 2016. So why no tribute? After all, football bangs on about how it is for the people and constantly gets itself into a lather saying how it brings all people together. After the weak lack of leadership from anyone in English football this week, I think it's all bullshit, to be honest. To me, there is something terribly, terribly wrong about this. After all, the English game is carried by 80 broadcasters in 212 countries and territories worldwide, and I bet a hell of a lot of them are Muslim countries, and an average 12 million watch one average game. So it leads me to wonder what those watching in predominantly Muslim countries were thinking, or even the Malaysian owner of Cardiff City, or one of the owners of Everton or Fulham, or one of the wealthiest clubs in the EPL, Manchester City. Thanks for the dollars we invest, but no thanks for not recognising when people of our religion who are only there to pray get gunned down. Real nice. It is interesting, of course, to note, and very, very ironic, that a list of Muslim footballers in the English Premier League, including the likes of Mohamed Salah, who was last year's top scorer from Liverpool, and his teammate Sadio Mane, along with names such as Manchester United's Paul Pogba, Arsenal's Mesut Ozil, and Chelsea's N'Golo Kanté, is numbered at exactly 50, the same number of Muslims that lost their lives last week. That was just as weak as piss as I have seen in a long, long time. Coming up next, the mid-season review. Welcome back. Yes, it's time for the mid-season review. Woohoo! And we are currently sitting fourth on percentage with 3 wins and 12 points, but a massive 12 points off the top, which of course is held by Royal Park. Royal Park, incidentally, are 2 wins ahead of both Greenvale and Sydenham. The fact we have only beaten one of the top four teams is a little bit of a concern for us. However, this season's competition is not as strong as last season's, so we have a good chance to do some damage against these teams. So Sunbury started off the season with a poor start against Greenvale and then turned it around with 3 wins on the trot, disposing of Dootagala, Sydenham and then Merlinston. 3 losses on the bounce have followed that, closely losing to St John Bosco, East Coburg and then of course last week getting beaten by the in-form Royal Park. Despite that, the position we are in is still in our hands, so it is up to us to decide what we want to do for the rest of the season. At this time last season, we were 3.5 wins out of 7, so we're a half game behind where we were. Analysing the run home, yes, I know I said I wouldn't try and analyse too much this season. I still think the captain can lead us to at least 5 wins, so that should put us in the running for at least 3rd or 4th spot. Now, speaking of the captain, well, he's had an interesting ride so far. The 3 wins in a row certainly had him up and about, and didn't we all get to hear about that? It is fair to say that Matthew has had an interesting last 3 weeks. Firstly, he forgets the balls, then the week after he takes a wrong turn to East Coburg with the hat man, nearly cost the team a default first set loss. Last week, he claims he can't find the scorebook, although he claims yours truly has it. For the 32nd time, Matthew, I do not have it, mate. Lord only knows what will happen when he rocks back into the team next week. It is never dull with the captain at the helm. Having said that, it's now time to have a quick look at each of the boys to see where they sit. Good old Harding is first up, 10 up this time last season. Now, he's had two really big weeks already, which has put his stats up. Mind you, when he's always hiding at 3 and 4, then they are bound to be very, very good. In all seriousness, he's playing very, very nicely at the moment, and he's up by 19 games. Eric Taylor, up 6 this time last season. Now, he did make mention to me after Thursday night's game, and I quote him, not in his Canadian accent, he said, "I'm not looking forward to this week's podcast, Mark. The reigning Audi Australia Player of the Year is currently a staggering 25 games down, had 3 very, very bad weeks, but knowing him as we all do, he'll knuckle down and get some confidence up by the end of this season." Matthew Clark, minus 12 this time last season. He's going along very nicely at the moment, the captain, and noticeably, which is a good thing, there's not much of a difference between his best and his worst at the moment, which means the consistency is getting to the level he needs to be at. Down 6 at the minute, so he's improved his stats. Mark Foster, up 3 this time last season, a bit like the captain, there's not much between his best and worst at this stage. Currently down 6. Lachlan Smith, up 20 this time last season, steady as she goes for the 3-time father. Had a slight blip in one match, but he is exactly at the same position he was last season, and dominating the lower parts, up by 20. And finally, the new boy, Ryan Hattie. Sorry to say this, mate, the Stevie Baker lookalike. Much like Baker's career at St Kilda, I'll tell you what, Hattie has had a real crack. Solid as a rock from the baseline, by his own admission, his net play needs a bit of work. Not Stephen Baker's, of course, but Ryan's. That will come, though, currently down 28, but I don't think the stats reflect what he's been doing. So it's time to have a look at those combinations which have that bit of magic between them whenever they strut out on the court together. Currently, there are 4 outstanding partnerships, and they are the following. In third place, with a positive figure of plus 7, it's the hitman, Ashley Harding and Foster, and also the hitman and the captain, Matthew Clark. And the current clubhouse leaders at the moment are the key man, Lachlan Smith and ET, and also the key man and the hitman with a positive figure of plus 10. Lockie is definitely meaning business this season. He's taking those boys on his shoulder. Now, as I've stated before, as much as we enjoy giving golf claps to those who play well, we also enjoy berating and enjoying a bit of schadenfreude at those combinations that quite frankly suck when playing with each other. And at the moment, there are 3 standout partnerships that have got to lift their game, namely Hattie and Taylor at minus 7, Clark and Hattie at minus 11, with the surprising duo of Taylor and Foster being the dopes at minus 12. Definitely no prize going on for this one, boys. Just the humility of knowing it's currently deplorable tennis. Boys, I have a message for you. I don't want to be at the top of this list at the end of the season, so it's time for the fingers to be fully pulled out. We'll be back to finish up this amazing, just amazing podcast very, very shortly. Yes, and welcome back. Now, it's time to go around the grounds for all the action from round 7. And there were quite a few smashings, let me tell you that. Greenvale easily accounted for Dudigalla by 15 games, 35-20. Sydenham won just as easily against St John Bosco by 16, 33-17. And in the close one, Merlinston defeated East Coburg by 4 games, winning 31-27. So, unbelievably after that, and I don't know how it's happened, but after 3 losses on the trot, we are still 4th. Now, perhaps that is showing the state of this season's competition. Who knows? Anyway, next week's clashes see Sydenham play Dudigalla, Merlinston play Royal Park, with St John Bosco against East Coburg. So, with round 7 out the way, it's time to check out the leaderboard for the prestigious tipping award. The captain, by way of his clean sweep of tips, moves to 18. Obviously indicates that he backed Royal Park. Do as you like, Matthew. The key man moves to outright second on 16, who also backed Royal Park as well, with the Hat Man and the Master Blaster on 15. Too far back now, by way of them not putting any tips in or even bothering to do anything about it, is ET on 10 with the Hitman, that lovable loser, on 7. Yes, boys, I know the Audi Australia Player of the Year award is the one that we all want to win, but with $30 cold out cash up for grabs, this is the second best award to win and easily the best tennis tipping competition going around. That's right, boys, $30 cold out cash. So, this week, Greenvale at home, 4th versus 3rd, and I think it's fair to say it is the game of the round, and it is also a mini-final. Greenvale are 2 wins ahead, and they knocked us off pretty convincingly in round 1 by 18 games. Now, interestingly enough, both Greenvale and Sunbury have dropped 3 of the last 4 games, so it is fair to say someone's going to be played back into form. And let's bloody well hope it's us. Now, Greenvale have a squad of 5 players and have used 2 emergencies. Robert Cullum's the standout at plus 41 but usually plays 4th, whereas their first nominated player, Hayden McAuliffe, is at positive 1. Should be a terrific clash, but I'm tipping the boys are going to get back into some winning form. 6 games the margin for mine. Now, for this week is the captain, who as we speak is face first in some kind of alcoholic beverage up in Marimbula, with the Hitman coming back in, who right now is probably face first in obscurity on a Wednesday night mixed tennis competition, coming back into the side. Well, that'll wrap it up for this episode. We'll go out tonight with a request for the key man, his wife, and the newest arrival to the key man clan, little Olivia. Speaking of Olivia, here is Olivia Newton-John from her album Physical, her 12th studio album released back in 1981. More than 12 studio albums, surely not. It's the title track, Physical. On that note, it's good night. Good luck. We'll be right back.